Fear does not exist in this dojo. Pain does not exist in this dojo. We do not train to be merciful here. This is a place of learning. This is a place of knowledge. For years we've gotten from Karate Kid and Cobra Kai. And now it's time for us to get back.
It'll open up a way for us to talk about all kinds of martial arts movies. There's also like no way to not compare those instantly to Karate Kid.
Man, face you, he is your enemy, and the enemy deserves no mercy. We teach the way of the mic. Welcome to Dojo 9.
On this episode of Dojo 9, join the senseis Dave the Clone, Chris Stiles, and Mickey Torres.
A martial arts champion in search of the glow.
Master, I need more time.
I am no longer your master.
A rock and roll star on the rise.
I know what it's like to lose precious things.
A madman.
Shogun of Harlem.
A maniac.
You're gonna put my video on your show, aren't you?
The answer is no.
Help! Somebody help me!
And the glamour, the power, and the sound of Motown.
I don't want you to kill anybody.
Are you out of your mind?
And the Leroy Green I'm looking for, the little punk thinks he's a kung fu master.
I am no master.
You sure look like a master to me.
This is Berry Gordy's The Last Dragon. It's about the power of the glow. Timok, Vanity. Berry Gordy's The Last Dragon, directed by Michael Schultz, a Motown Productions picture from TriStar.
What up, everybody out there in podcast land? Welcome to the Vintage Cinema Repair, also known as the VCR Shop, where we repair and restore your favorite franchises and give them a facelift for 2021. This week, we are talking about the most illustrious film in the history of Motown Pictures. That's right, the one, the only, Last Dragon. Who wants to dig in? Who wants to dive in and take the first high kick at Timok or Shonuff?
Well, if I could stop by real quick and just let you guys know that I'm from the Dojo 9 next door, and this is right up our alley.
Oh my god!
So
this is nice.
I'm so happy to see you guys were available to talk about. My tape of this just broke the other night, and I was thinking how awesome it would be if we could talk about bringing this to life in 2021. So thank you guys for doing this.
That's right, folks. You're hearing that right at home. That's the one and only Dave the Clone making this the first all-time VCR Dojo 9 crossover episode. That's right.
That's
right. Break out the Betamax and rewind those Laserdiscs, folks.
Man, face you, he is your enemy, and the enemy deserves no mercy. We teach the way of the mic. Welcome to Dojo 9.
Get ready, because we're taking you back to 1985.
I'm officially bowing at the center of the ring here as we talk about Timok. Timok, I'm sorry, Timok. My God.
Yes, I was saying it wrong for many years. I was saying Timac. Maybe it's the Apple nerd in me. I don't know.
Or maybe you were trying to sing Return of the Mac.
That could have been. There's a lot of ways you could take that.
It
could be the Midwest in me where everything's like, oh, Timok. Like, oh, he's a wonderful martial artist. I'm doing a little Staten Island in there, but.
There's some vanity. Like
Tupac instead of Tupac.
Tupac.
How much Tupac do you got?
I have relatives that would probably say that.
It's the Midwest, folks. What can you do? What was everyone's point of entry for The Last Dragon? Do you guys remember? Like, did you see it in theaters, cable, video rental, Comedy Central? You know, how did this movie probably kick its way into your heart?
Comedy Central.
We have yet to create a martial arts network, but Comedy Central would be the most likely that would have shown this, now that I think about it.
Oh, I watched it many times on Comedy Central. That's not even me being witty or funny. That's just like a fact of life. Okay. Comedy Central in the 90s was like, they were doing some shit, man. They were like, they weren't just resting on their laurels. They weren't just trying to win Ben Stein's money. There was a lot more going on those early Daily Show years. But we'll save that for another day. And I think that may have been, honestly, the first time I'd seen The Last Dragon might have been on Comedy Central, to tell you the truth.
I know my mom rented it. It's one of, like, so if anything, growing up, not to take any props away from my dad, but my mom was definitely the cool one who would, like, rent the movies that we probably shouldn't have been allowed to watch at the age that we were watching them. And this is definitely one of those movies that fell right in line with sort of the Remo Williams kind of Adventure Begins feel. And it was pre-Karate Kid, right? Or was it a year after Karate Kid?
The year after.
So there was kind of, I think the stage was set a little bit with the Mr. Miyagi for this type of a, hey, it's kind of like Karate Kid, but not really. And hence the dojo's interest in this film.
Yeah, I think that's definitely, I mean, I think everything that had to do with martial arts between 1984 and 1994, you know, for like a 10-year period there, like everything had a little something to do with Karate Kid. So it's definitely, and you know, of course, Taimok is a classic Miyagi-Do. His sensei is a total Mr. Miyagi. There's no question about that. That Shonuf is as fucking Cobra Kai as Cobra Kai gets. The only problem with Shonuf being Cobra Kai is that Cobra Kai isn't Shonuf enough for Shonuf. My theory.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know,
I feel like that's something only people in the VCR universe would understand. That is one hell of a statement, man.
I mean, picture it. San Fernando Valley, 1986. Terry Silver is trying to explain the finer points of the Quicksilver method to fucking Shonuf, and he's going to say, like, get out of here with that bullshit.
Well, that's
a
whole
thing. I got time, you know.
Shonuf. He's probably going to say, kiss my Converse.
Yeah, dude, Terry Silver would be fucking tying those laces with his teeth.
There you go. I don't think, to be honest, I don't remember where I saw this. I mean, I have to be honest. It was probably cable of some sort, maybe HBO, maybe something like that. I don't know. I mean, like, when this came out, I think I was all about 9 years old. So I wasn't seeing it in theaters, for sure.
Yeah.
So I must have stumbled upon this, like, on HBO or something.
But it's like such a part of your life now that you don't even remember. You just like know you love this movie and it's been around forever.
Oh, yeah.
I love that. I love when I can't even remember the first time exactly that I saw a movie that, you know, a lot of movies like Die Hard, Karate Kid, Back to the Future, like it just seemed to be like a part. I can't remember a time before those were in my life. Alarm just went off.
When I meet people who haven't seen movies like this and who also is something that, like, we were talking about offline a little earlier today about how, like, some of these movies just feel like they were always there. Like, it's almost like it's part of your bloodstream. Like, after the first time you watched it, you took a little piece of the movie took a little piece of you, and now all of us who are in that same boat kind of have this kind of connection. And when you run into people who didn't have that experience, who don't experience movies like that in the first place, but then in particular didn't have that experience with movies like this, it's so hard to explain what that was like, especially if they're just watching it now. And I will say, yet again, I took notes for, and I usually don't do that for podcasting, and a lot of my notes are just like, wow, holy shit, and Jesus Christ, did that just happen? Because, oh my God, man, even thinking about what cancel culture would feel like watching this movie.
Yeah.
What y'all looking for?
I am looking for the master.
Ain't no masters here, dude. Ain't no slaves either, dude.
Is this not his fortune cookie factory?
The master, he doing his wisdom thing.
I seek only wisdom of the master.
You want wisdom? You buy a fortune cookie.
Take a hike, cool breeze.
Yeah, baby.
Please, I must see the master. It is very important to me.
Look here, chump. The master don't see nobody. Especially no jive coolies.
Yeah, he don't see no one who don't know how to get down, baby. Right, you down. Dig, bro? You too square, man.
Square, dude. Let me say it so he can understand it, Jim. You go now. Chop, chop. Holy ass out of this place. Am I saying right, my man? That's good. That's good.
Hey, baby. That's good.
Like an awesome pasta, you know?
Ciao, baby. Finishes. Arrivederci, baby.
Awesome amigo.
Sayonara.
Catch you on the flip-flop.
Sayonara. Mm-hmm. Don't talk, don't talk.
Wow, it's a powder keg, but it's our powder keg, and it's a beloved classic, and I did not feel that way about it growing up. I didn't really feel that way about it watching it now. It was just something that stood out to me of like, whoa, the world is a different place now.
Like, the thing is, let's just take, like, the show notes entrance.
At the theater,
and he calls out Bruce Leroy, and then he says, like, catch him bullets with his teeth, and then I won't say the next line.
Yeah,
but like when you're a kid and you watch this, you're like, what? I'm like, this is crazy.
The whole thing about
that was,
oh, go ahead, Chris.
No, you did.
I was saying the whole thing with that entire atmosphere, like this underground kung fu movie cult of people who watch the movie in the theater and are doing all the dialogue in time. Like, this is like a Rocky Horror Picture Show without all the androgyny and weirdness. It's like, you know, and cross-dressing and all that stuff. This is just a bunch
of... You had that. The guy...
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
The guy's girlfriend.
He's like, oh, don't hurt his face. Well, the fact, too, that it's half Fight Club, half Rocky Horror Picture Show going on up in here, you know? And so
all Motown and all awesome.
Yeah, oh, dude, yeah. I am not saying this in a negative in any way. It was just that
it's like RoboCop. Like, it's part this, part that, but all kick ass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have to establish this is the New York version of the karate, you know? So Karate Kid, California, Last Dragon, this is full on, like the harsh, scary version of New York that people probably don't remember from the 80s anymore. I'm like,
well, yeah, or especially the early 80s too, like Night Shift,
yeah.
You know, that really kind of dark, yeah, scary corners of New York where, of course, people are getting mugged. It's fucking New York. Like, that was the, you know, the portrayal of New York on film at the time.
Yeah,
well, it's Harlem. Basically, it's Harlem, so...
Yeah, the Shogun of Harlem. Like, I didn't know Harlem had a Shogun problem. I didn't know, you know what I mean? Like, like there's a certain aspect to this, and it's just because I've also this week been on a weird tear of I watched all the Mad Max movies, and like Shogun walking in, just that most of his crew having their sort of costuming being like shoulder pads and sort of kind of out of place anywhere except for this world of kung fu that's just... can drop into a kung fu battle. This is like a musical, but with just kung fu fighting. And there was something about that look that kind of struck me as like, this is the beginning. This was when they thought the world was going to end by 2000, and the mid to late 80s was going to be a full on New York is just a wasteland. And he's like the first humongous. You know what I mean?
It's like the Legion of Doom meets karate.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Show enough.
Well, you know. They say you don't remember a movie without remembering the bad guy, and fuck me, dude, Shonoff is just about as good as it gets. Like, he's definitely on the Mount Rushmore of 80s bad guys. In the same way that Bruce Leroy, or Leroy Green, is on the Mount Rushmore of, like, 80s heroes holding down their city, right? Like, if you go to Detroit, you fuck with RoboCop. You come to New York, you're fucking with The Last Dragon, and you're about to get, like, the glow, and you get your ass kicked, and... Oh, I just love this and fucking movie. This movie should be celebrated.
This is totally the world where you would drive, like Jack Burton would drive from one coast to the other talking about this shit. You know what I mean? Like, it's the same world.
Yeah. Totally.
Like, that's fucking what I mean when the movie universe is a giant shared universe before we've had all these, like, microcosms of, like, MCU and DCU and now Karate Kid. It's like the universe used to be big and we used to be able to think about it in these terms, you know.
I almost think of this movie kind of like you know, you had like Wizard of Oz, and then for, you know, more urban, you know, more you know, minorities or whatever you want to say, you had The Wiz.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like, that's what they did with this, basically.
Can you feel a brand new day?
But you know what, I feel like even that doesn't cover it, because like I knew this movie was special back then. Like, yeah, I knew it was cheesy and stupid and like corny and like, but I also kind of knew that was a lot of that was obviously tongue in cheek.
Mm-hmm.
They totally knew what they were doing with all that stuff. And that shit is, you know, that stuff stays with you. I remember Sean Astin saying this. He's like, I thought the Goonies was hokey and corny when I first read it, because I didn't realize that hokey is like what's up. He's like, that's the part that, you know, people love. It's our time down here and this and that, you know. And this movie is definitely made with heart.
Oh my God, yeah.
You know, there's obviously a deep love of martial arts philosophies, like at the soul of the movie. But, and then at the same time, it's a fucking sprawling 80s music video. It is dude, like the clothes are in Technicolor, like the beats are on fucking fire. The dance moves are fucking, like, will burn your soul. Like this movie, the dancing in this movie, it, like, rivals the dancing in Beat Street and Break-In and like all that.
Oh yeah.
You know.
But it was that era too. And the soundtrack is slamming. I mean, like, dude, come on. Yeah. You got El DeBarge, Rhythm of the Night. Come on, who better? God.
When
who
that kicked
at that
in
time?
I was like, this I'll must be what, where I got my love of that song from, this movie, and I just subconsciously never knew it, because when it happened, when I was watching it earlier to, like, kind of get prepared, I was like, oh, DeBarge, like, total nostalgia bomb, just what, my mind is in a happy place.
Dude, not only that, you got Rockwell, you got my man Willie fucking Hutch, you got the Glow, dude, this soundtrack is fire. You got Vanity, dude, there's, like, this is a deep, deep soundtrack. This is, in fact, I listened to the whole fucking thing on my way down to Trenton like a couple weeks ago, and I was like in a great mood when I got there. I was like,
I felt that's, like that's I had the Barry fucking Gordy glow. Magic. Barry Gordy magic right there.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't get better. Doesn't get better than Barry Gordy.
There's so much about this movie that is also not only a time capsule, but feels like an early version of what I call video game the movie, because it's a full on, I'm training, I'm already at a certain level, and now you're sending me on my first solo quest to find more knowledge than I ever thought before. And that's where it becomes this colorful, constantly like trying to get to the next level. So once we find some bad guys, although I mean, I would say finding Shonuff early in the game here was pretty, you know, it was interesting that they didn't fight in this scene. You know what I mean? That Leroy gets kind of out of the theater before having a throwdown. But you have this whole culture of all these other people who were just waiting for Shogun to show up, and they wanted to throw down against him. And it's sort of like, we kind of didn't discuss why Thunderdome exists here. You know what I mean? Like, what's up with that? And are there other Thunderdomes? Like, is this a thing where we could have had a sequel to this movie where there's like a circuit and this was just the Shogun of Harlem, and there could be a Shogun of the Bronx, a Shogun of Manhattan. You know what I mean?
Oh,
like, what kind of area didn't we get to not tread in this movie, you know?
Well, that alone, you know, not to get too ahead of ourselves, we are going to get into how we would bring it back and stuff. But, I mean, speaking of lost opportunities, that's, you know, they could have done that in 1986, 87, 88, 89, 90. You know, and it would have been fucking great. Like, imagine Game of Death, you know, where he has to go through, like, the seven levels or whatever.
Yep.
You know, he's got the five boroughs. He's got to go through a Shogun from every borough, and the last one would have to be Manhattan.
Oh,
that would be the Wu-Tang Clan.
No. It ends at Gramercy Park, and we're in the Warriors, dude. The Riffs. He takes over the Riffs.
Oh, that might. Oh man.
Can that's, you dig it?
There you go.
That's like,
you
oh, go. Yeah. Oof, man, that's big.
I know, right? What have we done?
Yeah. There may be no going back now, folks.
Yeah, no.
But I mean, you know, I've like I said, I knew there was a little bit more, like something special to this, and there is some kind of, you know, some philosophy, and there's of course some movie bullshit because there's movie bullshit in every movie. You know, I love the crane kick from Karate Kid, but that's like movie bullshit. I think Jerry Weintraub even said the term movie bullshit. You know, he was talking about Miyagi's healing technique.
Yeah,
but that's part of, you know. It gives it that kind of spiritual, that like mysterious, that sort of supernatural aspect. And of course, having the dude's fucking glow.
Yeah, that was awesome. You have to go learn the glow. Like, that's kind of video game the movie, too. You know what I mean? Like, go out and learn this special maneuver. But he didn't warn him that there was other glow out there. You know what I mean? So it's sort of like when that happens, I thought that was a pretty cool, you know, shocker at the end. A little like, whoa, dude, there's evil glow. Fuck, why didn't we think that was going to happen? You know, that was my bad.
I think he alluded to that because even when he was breaking it down for Laura, telling her the, you know, basically for Vanity, Laura Charles, you know, he was saying like, but in the hands of a evil person, it could be, you know, dangerous, this and that.
Yes.
So I think he alludes to the fact that, like, you know, an evil person can have the glow as well. It's just,
yeah, they do a little wink of that.
So it's a little Star Wars-y, like Dark Side of the Force kind of shit.
He just like shocked, like, you know, I mean, we're going like way ahead of the game, but like, I think he was more shocked at the fact that he was actually seeing somebody who had the glow.
And that it was like someone that he, you know, there's this like, he's got the Miyagi level of respect, you know, he's the one who actually doesn't want to fight. He'll only fight when he's forced to. So for him to think that it was someone on that level, you know what I mean? Like a bad guy could also get to this level. That's supposed to be the stuff that's reserved just for the heroes. You know, there's supposed to be certain levels that only the super good could get to.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. You know, I remember the quote from this, and they lay it out right in the beginning. Like, how did you know that was the one? Like, I don't know. He's like, you have done it. Like, you've known without knowing, or something like that. You have achieved thought or knowledge without thought, or something. Mm-hmm. And it's like so simple, but it just sounds so right. It's like, God damn it. I love movie bullshit. I love movie bullshit. And when it works, it's movie magic. And for me, that is kind of movie magic a little bit.
Yeah.
I want to find Timok. I want to learn, you know, his shit. And, you know, obviously, fans of the film who've done deep dives know that he was cast for his martial arts abilities and not his acting. He didn't really have any acting resume beforehand. For a first time, you know, role. I think he does actually a really great job. There's some parts where it's a little tough acting to Nacton, but that's on the director, honestly. That's on the director, it's on the editor, that's on everyone else that got passed. He has a lot to do. Not only are you in almost every scene of a movie, but you have to be like a black superhero, which is new, and that I'm sure carried a lot of, you know, that's importance. And then also you have to do it with this Asian spin where he's kind of a, you know, he's a badass, but he's a fish out of water, you know.
But it's also the, like, homage to not only who Bruce Lee was, but the fact that Bruce Lee created such a persona around himself, kind of like Elvis, right? He's like the Elvis of martial arts. So it was almost like they had to do that without crossing over into too hokey. Where, I mean, like, this is got cheese, right? Like, there's a full-on pizza delivery going on with this movie, but it's in a realm where watching it, like, I guess in the post-Cobra Kai world, I'm kind of like, holy shit, man. I mean, the guy was basically doing a Bruce Lee impersonation, but a serious one. Like, he was capturing what Bruce Lee would be like in Harlem in 1985. You know what I mean? Like, it was almost like Kung Fu the Legend Continues, right? Like, he's wandering the earth and just dealing with the elements around him. And the elements around him were very weird. Like, there's a lot going on with the villains in this movie as well.
Oh yeah, I mean that. Mickey, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just gonna say the relevance and the importance of this movie to me is actually like, this is actually like more so than even Karate Kid. I mean, the Karate Kid I guess started a little bit, but for me, like, you know, Last Dragon like really made me want to learn martial arts. Like, I really was like, I was starting to buy the magazines. I was starting to like, you know, like when he dresses up as the ninja, I was like, that was my Halloween costume all the time. Like, let me be a ninja because I wanted to be cool like that.
I was a ninja one year.
Yeah.
I was Daniel LaRusso in Halloween 88. But I didn't see the fucking Last Dragon until like mid-90s Comedy Central. You know, it's one of those movies I wish I'd discovered it back in the day. But, you know, I'm glad I found it when I did. Goddamn, this movie's just fucking wonderful. And like, we still haven't even talked about Eddie Arcasian, another amazing villain. You don't get shit like that in Karate Kid. And Vanity, oh my God. Me and Mickey were like jokingly fighting with each other just over who gets Vanity if she was, I mean, she's not even alive, but like, we just like, who doesn't love Vanity, man? Like, Jesus.
Well, for me, like, I'm a huge Prince fan. So like, Vanity was on my radar a long time. And then like, seeing her in this movie and this and that. So for me, like, that was it. Like, you know, this movie again, like, you know, what trumps, like, you know, in a way, like Karate Kid. And I'm not going to say this is better than Karate Kid. I'll leave that to argument. But I will say that, you know, that I just absolutely love Vanity. So like, this was so appealing to me. I was like, oh my God, Vanity's in this movie. This is awesome.
Well, there's something about the way that they prop up the idea of like the power of a pop star. You know, so much of the villain's plan is about controlling, you know, whether that new chick becomes a pop star, Angela, you know, making sure that Vanity plays their video at her club. It was a really, you know, when you try to think about who was writing this and how they were trying to structure it, it was almost like, all right, we know we want karate. We know we want it in Harlem. We know we want music. How in the hell do we connect all of these? You know what I mean? And so it was, I felt like it was an odd, you know, you've got a villain with a tank of piranha in his office. You know, we got one of the gas man from Dumb and Dumber is one of his main henchmen who actually has aspirations of being a video producer. Like, this shit is all over the place.
Former boxer as well.
Yeah. And this is only like Vanity's second movie ever too.
What was her first movie?
The first movie was Tanya's Island. So she starred in that too.
I love it. I just read it on IMDb. I don't know what the hell that is.
Exactly. I never saw that. So I actually the funny thing about it is like, if you think about it, she was supposed to be in Purple Rain.
Oh shit.
So really? Her and Prince were dating at the time, and he was writing Purple Rain, and you know, she was Purple Rain. She was in it and everything else like that. And then they broke up. And that's when he had to recast her, you know, basically with Apollonia. But she was Purple Rain. A lot of that inspiration, a lot of the story, a lot of the love interest, everything was based on Vanity.
Holy shit.
And
that's amazing.
Then she just, you know, they broke up and that was it. And then soon after, because she was also, remember, she was the only real, I don't want to say the only big hit, but the main hit that everybody remembers is Nasty Girl, and that was with Prince. So she was with him and signed Warner Brothers and his record label and everything else like that. One of the proteges went on tour with him and everything, and then soon after, just the relationship dissolved, and you know, she left and not in Purple Rain anymore, and she signed with Motown Records in 84. Just a little just a little bit after this, you know. So, actually, before the movie, but that's how she got involved in this, basically, because she was already at Motown Records, and they were like, "Well, perfect, we'll put her in this."
Yeah.
Wow, dude, that's amazing. I had no idea about that.
That's a crazy backstory.
You want a little more craziness? Side note, sad note, but she only died a couple months before Prince died.
Oh, that's true.
Yep, and I believe they were the same age.
Wow, that is nuts. I love Vanity. You can't I just have to say the words Action Jackson because I love that movie too.
Yeah, dude.
and all things Vanity need to be celebrated.
Those are the things I know her from that and this. You know what I mean?
And I know like, she went. I know Vanity had a few like you know sketchy years there, and she was like a bad influence on Nikki Sixx at one point.
Yeah,
which I think is amazing. Like, how do you be a bad influence on someone from Motley Crue? Like, that's fucking yeah. incredible. Like, that's the made-for-TV movie I need to see.
Dear Lord.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully made for Showtime.
No, I'm joking. Yeah. No, man, actually, HBO Max, that's where everything is now.
You know what? Honestly, it'd be way funnier on Lifetime anyways. They try and, like, do the clean version of that shit. It's fucking hilarious.
No, they make it an after-school special. It's a don't-let-this-happen-to-you story.
Am I the meanest?
Sure enough.
Am I the prettiest?
Sure enough.
Am I the baddest mofo low down around this town?
Sure enough.
Well, who am I?
Sure enough.
Who am I?
Sure enough.
I can't hear you.
Sure enough.
The Shogun of Harlem. Yes!
Yeah, the diet caffeine-free version of Motley Crue. Anyway, not
shit,
to be too
we're
too
still
far
alive.
Not to get too far out of off topic here. You know, Last Dragon also has Faith Prince is amazing as Eddie Arcasian's girlfriend.
Angela,
whatever. Yeah, like yeah. Also from Kew Gardens, and also getting by on my tits. Like and she was awesome on Spin City. She went on to have a big Broadway career.
It's so,
and of course. Oh, what was that?
I would say like the first scene when she shows up, like I have I drew like a cross on my page. I wrote hashtag Rainbow Bright, then I wrote hashtag Gas Man from Dumb and Dumber, and then I wrote is this a Max Headroom world kinda, and then I just wrote Jesus fucking Christ. I don't know what that last one was about, but it was like I figured we'd figure it out. But my God, I love their world, that silver office, like the metropolis where all the bad shit is being planned.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. And even, it's totally like that. Like yeah, think about it. It's very much like Batman. Very like Gotham.
Yeah, like the Penguin's lair. Like it's like the you know, it's very, you know, very villainous. And we gotta give shout outs to some seriously heavy hitter cameos, like William H. Macy as JJ, her manager, and fucking Chaz Palminteri as the limo driver when they try to kidnap her. Holy crap. I was like, no way, dude.
Yeah.
And you have you have Rudy as well. Uh-huh. As his sister.
Yeah, oh yeah, that's right. What's the actress's name?
Keisha. I lost it.
Hold on. Yeah. Got the Google machine going. Stand by.
Right on.
But Rudy
from The Cosby Show, yeah.
And you also had Cockroach from The Cosby Show as well.
A cockroach is in there? I don't even think I caught that last time
Keisha Knight, yep.
Oh, right. Yes.
Yeah, Cockroach is when Shogun gets bust up the pizza joint.
Yeah.
Cockroach is one of the friends that picks up Richie out of the trash can.
Fucking A.
Cockroach. Yeah, and Richie, my God, Leo O'Brien. We got to talk about that kid in this movie. My God. He's all
He's amazing.
He's the one who's like, she's my girl, man. That's my girl.
Yeah. That Mickey was hitting me with those lines when I started talking about Vanity. He's like, you ain't got no moves. Like, you don't even have a paintbrush. Like, you can't draw.
Get your hands off my woman.
Yeah. Oh, Lord Charles is mine. Like, oh, I love it. Yeah, he does. You know what's cool about him, too? That character in the movie, you actually get probably the most exposition from him.
Yeah.
And he does it in a very entertaining way, a very charismatic way. He's a very good actor, and that, like, I think that really helped Timok. Like, I think some of his best scenes are with his brother.
Yeah, yeah.
Acting-wise, you know. obviously everyone loves the fighting and the, you know, vanity scenes, of course.
And there's a lot of music too. There are a lot of music videos in this movie. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's kind of like a nonstop, like, we didn't have a lot of plot. Like, we were really, really trying to make it work. So we filled a lot of time with just kind of like musical performances. But also New York had that kind of a feel to it, right? Where there was a lot of like street performance was a big deal. And especially in like Harlem, you know, there was a lot of street performers going on. So I kind of feel like there's that whole section with the guys at Some Dumb Guy doing the kind of like, I don't even know how to address this in a way that would be politically correct. So we should just have to like talk about it directly. But like the fact that they are aping a totally other culture, I was just like, this is wild. I love it, but holy, how would we talk about this? How do we do this now? You know what I mean?
I think it's exaggerated, of course, because it's a movie, and it's really exaggerated because it's an 80s movie. But I think in a certain sense, that is kind of New York. You know, it's a melting pot. You know, everyone, that did occur, you know.
Mm.
You know, these people wanted to be those people. Those people wanted to be these people. These, you know, like everybody wanted to be something different than what they are. Or not even in that way. Or just everyone wanted to embrace, you know, all the other cultures they were exposed to. Because the 80s, you know, it's like if you look at like the shit that Americans had been exposed to at the beginning of 1970, it's like nothing compared to, you know, what they had been exposed to by 1985.
You've been listening to the Hollow Nine Network, bringing you the very best in fan-made media. That's the word hollow, the number 9, INE. Now broadcasting from our new home on the web, Hollow9.com, where you can find info on all of our awesome programming as well as the team behind the shows. Leave us your feedback, join in the conversation, and be a part of the action. Find the Hollow9 Network on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. Rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you find your podcasts. Email us at info@hollow9.com or at hollow9podcast@gmail.com. Join in the fun. Hollow 9. The New Jersey HorrorCon reputation is exploding. The atmosphere you guys have created. New Jersey HorrorCon was my entree into an actual horror convention.
Wow. Love it.
And you guys are doing a great job.
That is amazing. I'm super proud and super inspired to hear that. I mean, that's a testament to the community of cons and, you know, of horror and stuff in general.
My God.
Oh, my God.
Oh, it's Carmen Electra.
Hey, hey,
wow, we are all giving high fives to an absolute icon. This is incredible.
Trailblazer, amazing. You are amazing. Carmen Electra,
absolutely. Be well. Safe. Thank you so much.
Love.
Have a good one. Be well.
So
you can't
happened.
See it on radio, but
oh,
she's still
God.
Got
yes.
it.
Oh, my God, yes. Absolutely.
Wife right
still
there.
Got
my wife gets the picture of Carmen Electra.
The wife does it. There you go, wife. Good job, wife. That's a keeper. That wife's a keeper.
Are you having a blast?
I am having a blast. Are you having a blast?
I am.
This place is awesome, right?
What's your most favorite part of the whole day so far?
When the guy dressed like Gene Simmons from Kiss stopped in front of our booth and we put Strutter on and he did a lip sync to the whole thing.
Guys, if you haven't subscribed yet, go ahead and do that.
Yesterday I bumped into Michael Winslow. I got to have this whole experience where Leslie Easterbrook was lost and looking for her autograph table and I got to take her all around me.
It's spooky, actually. I'm going to turn the chair around a little bit
sure.
so I can see you.
Oh, all right.
Keep an eye on you. I saw you and I thought, this guy knows everything.
Oh.
Terrific
oh, really?
And
oh.
sound in here with
cool.
you.
Thank
yeah.
you. Thank you. Yeah, it's
really
amazing
clear.
How it...
Damon Della Greca of Slasher, this awesome app.
I wanted to do something that would really make it for these people who just love to create, who love horror.
Thank you for what you're doing, dude. It's
Thank
great
you.
That you put this together.
Absolutely, man. It's always good to see you.
We're trying to have as much fun, and we want people to have fun with us, and that's why we got guys like you stop by the table, hang out. We got to do the radio thing for a little bit.
He's from Jersey, you know. I'm from the South, so.
And I'm from the Bronx, so.
Oh,
so we're all still okay. friends. That's good.
So we're all good. Daniel Frankenstein.
Brent. I'm representing psychothematicmedia.com. Call ourselves a creative collective.
My name is Gail Bykowitz.
Yeah, I'm Hector De La Rosa. We're partners in crime here. We're doing special effects makeup, and we're also independent filmmakers.
When I ran into them earlier, they were definitely vampire cowboys.
I love Better Off Dead. I love Dylan Ted. And I'm just so glad that you guys remember
those
films.
Oh my god, those movies. I would go to school and just try and talk like Bill and Ted all day.
I want to go back.
$2, man. Right? I have walked around wanting those $2 for how many years now?
This is fantastic.
David Clone from the Hollow Knight Network, and by now you know what it's time for you to do. Let's go on over to NewJerseyHorrorCon.com, get yourself some tickets, and check out this awesome event where we are lifetime sponsors. We will be there from now until infinitum with all these incredible guests that are going to be at the next one, bringing you all the awesome from the show floor right to your digital door, right here at Hollow9.com at the New Jersey Horror Con and Film Festival.
Did you get it? I hope you got it.
I got it.
That's good. See you soon.
I don't know if you think making me repeat myself is going to somehow make the story change, or if you just don't want to hear what it is I actually have to say, but again, we changed course based on orders received on the flash band from company headquarters. Code Gold, command eyes only. Standard operating procedure, as I know you are aware. Search and rescue would rarely venture into an unregulated area without more concrete proof of life. We sure found something out there, all right.
When you watch it as a little kid, you know, it's a monster movie. It's creepy. But then there's all the weird artificial intelligence stuff. There's the, like, rapey nature of the face huggers and all that.
Why don't you stick your face in the egg, dude? Is there an egg opening in front of you? Stick your face in there and see what happens.
When I fall asleep at night, I have this irrational fear that something is going to crawl inside and, like, lay eggs inside of me. I'm actually wondering, now that we're talking about this, if this might have been the impetus for that.
You know, Star Wars comes out, and they go, what other movies do we have set in space? Boom, Alien gets green light the next day.
Very similar to just even how our government is in preparation for something where they didn't know exactly what was in store, like specifically xenomorphs.
Bodily fluids, and it's not just blood. There's a lot of, like, grease, and there's a lot of sweat. And if it wasn't the blood that got me, it was the sheer amount of sweat.
We're on a mission to bring back knowledge of the xenomorph.
The end of all mankind, all wrapped up in a bow, just waiting for us to come along. You're gonna find yourself staring down the barrel of a living, breathing devil in the flesh that bleeds acid and lives to kill us.